Friends, fellow social workers, we are here this evening to participate in this seminar, to understand and discuss the problems faced by the social workers and the solutions for those problems. The profession of social service is a very noble profession. If one gives social service selflessly, without making it a means of livelihood, there is nothing that can surpass it. But even if one makes it a means of livelihood, this profession remains far superior to any other profession, any other means of livelihood. You serve others, you help others. People with so much of melancholy on their face come to you. People with so much of anguish and pain in their heart come to you. And you help them to come out of that pain, come out of that anguish, and enjoy real peace. The joy within. What better profession there can be? Such a noble profession, and yet full of hazards. The path is very hazardous. A social worker understands after a few years of experience, the path is hazardous, very slippery, with perils and pitfalls, dangerous. A noble path to serve others may result in your own misery. And this is what happens when it is not handled properly. You deal with a person who is suffering. Mental suffering, full of depression, maybe full of a feeling of insecurity. This person is generating vibration which is full of unhappiness, agitation. This person is in a whirlpool of misery. You try to help him out, help her out. You counsel once, twice, thrice, continuously for a few days. And quite possible, you notice that you are being sucked in this whirlpool of misery yourself. How to come out of this danger? This practice of vipassana gives you a solution for this. There is a seed of that particular mental problem which is manifesting itself with your patient. You have that seed in you also. And by coming in contact with the vibration generated by this person who is overpowered by that particular misery, the seed inside you gets germinated, gets stimulated, and it increases, increases, and you get engulfed in your own vibration, which is a product of your seed. Unless you take out these seeds from your own mind, the path remains hazardous. If you yourself are not enjoying real peace within, real harmony within, real healthy mind, if you don't have that with you, you really can't help others. You may help at the surface level for some time, but you can't help others. A lame person cannot support another lame person. A blind person cannot show path to another blind person. Vipassana helps you to come out of your own misery. At a very deep level of everyone's mind, there are seeds of different kinds of tendencies, mental tendencies, which bring all this misery. When you are counseling somebody who is very fearful of the future, full of fear for the future, have a feeling of insecurity. What will happen to I? What will happen to this I? What will happen to this mine, my family, my spouse, my children, my parents, my brothers, my sisters, my accumulations, my wealth, my position, my power, my status? What will happen to it? This is the problem of your patient, your client. Understand, you also have the same problem within you. It is lying latent. The more and more you are with this vibration where somebody is overwhelmed with this kind of misery, a feeling of insecurity, fear for the future, these vibrations come in contact with you, come in contact with your mind, come in contact with the depth of your mind, where these latent germs are there. They are shaken. The vibrations of these germs in you, the seeds in you, are exactly the same vibration being generated by your patient, by your client. They both get tuned up. And this stimulates your own vibration. You may not know. It doesn't give effect immediately. But slowly, in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year, you keep coming in contact with such kind of patients and you find that your own problem becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, and you want a psychiatrist, you want a psychoanalyst, you want a psychotherapist, a counselor to help you. You had come out to help others. And now you need to help yourself. How to come out of this problem? By Vipassana, which is nothing but a science of mind and matter, the interaction of mind and matter, how one is influencing the other constantly. How one is getting influenced by the other constantly. The mind keeps on influencing the matter, our physical structure. The matter keeps on influencing our mind, the mental structure. There is a constant interaction going on. One does not know because one does not know how to see things inside, how to observe the reality inside objectively. You get overwhelmed by all that, that's a different thing. But to observe it objectively, is an art, a technique, and this is what is called vipassana. By observing it objectively, you can understand how this entire physical structure is working, how this mental structure is working, what interaction is going on, how currents are going deep inside, cross currents are there, counter currents are there, undercurrents are there, which result in making you unbalanced and suffer. The root of your misery is deep inside. The root of everyone's misery is deep inside. A client comes to you, a patient comes to you and cries, my spouse is like that, my spouse is like that, my relationship has gone so bad, or I have this problem, that problem. They are all external problems. At the apparent level, yes, they are true. We don't deny that. This is apparent truth. But the real truth is something totally different. Each individual carries the real cause of one's own misery within oneself. This real cause of misery, if this is not understood, and if this is not eradicated, all counseling at the surface level will remain superficial. You help somebody to come out of a particular situation, what happens? A few days later, a few months later, a few years later, some other situation arises which is more overwhelming, and this person again comes, and this person again comes. You can't really help somebody. And as you keep on facing such problems, you find you are getting overwhelmed by all that. If such thing has happened to my patient, will not happen to me? Will not happen to me? This worry, this anxiety. You remain overwhelmed by this worry, you remain overwhelmed with this anxiety, and you can't come out of it. Vipassana will help you. As I said, this is a science, pure science. It has nothing to do with these organized religions. It was a very wonderful discovery by somebody, a truth which one found out by making a dip inside, observing the truth within the framework of the body, inside. The apparent truth is a truth also, we don't deny it. Apparent truth creates a lot of delusions, confusions, illusions, hallucinations. But the whole path of observing the truth to the deepest level, this is the path of vipassana, is to come out of all confusions, all delusions, all illusions. Oh, this is apparent truth. It appears to be so, which is also truth. It seems to be so, truth. This is not the real truth. As you start observing it, it starts getting dissected, dissolved, and you move towards the ultimate truth. The apparent truth is solidified, intensified. This material structure made of bones, flesh, blood, etc. But as you learn the technique to observe it objectively at the experiential level, you will reach the stage where you find that the entire physical structure is nothing but mass of subatomic particles arising, passing, vibrations with great velocity, high frequency, arising, passing. This is the deeper truth of this physical structure. to accept this truth at the intellectual level, because a scientist says so, there is no solidity in the entire material world, it is mere wavelets, a scientist says so, and you accept it. Or an enlightened person who has experienced it says so, and you accept it, doesn't help. It's only a mere intellectual game. It doesn't help. But the same reality, when you experience yourself, it makes a big difference. Then you start understanding this apparent truth and the ultimate truth pertaining to the physical structure. And similarly, the apparent truth pertaining to the mind and the ultimate truth pertaining to the mind. The apparent truth pertaining to the mental contents and the ultimate truth pertaining to the mental contents. The apparent truth, so intensified, so solidified, it tries to overpower you. Emotion is the reason. The contents of your mind, emotion, fear, feeling of insecurity, passion, ego, whatever arises, it arises so intensely, it overpowers you. If you learn how to observe it, oh, passion has a reason. Now look, fear has a reason. Now look, a feeling of insecurity has a reason. Anger has a reason. Aversion has a reason. Craving has a reason. Whatever is the reason in the mind, it is a reason in a very solidified, intensified way. You observe. Just observe it objectively, and it starts getting disintegrated, divided, dissected, disintegrated, dissolved. It turns into vibrations. Nothing but vibrations. Vibrations of this frequency or that frequency, this wavelength or that wavelength. The entire physical structure, the entire mental structure, the combination of the two, which once keeps on saying, I, mine, is nothing but vibration, constantly changing. You can't control it. You can't make it non-changing. It's bound to change. It keeps on changing. Then you smile at that reality of insecurity. Oh, look, it keeps on changing. So what? Worry has come. So what? Anxiety has come. So what? Changing. It will change. And yes, it changes. You keep on observing. As the vibrations change, that particle in emotion changes, and goes away. You don't observe it objectively. Then it overpowers you. And you keep on multiplying it. And it multiplies. You become a bundle of misery. The whole process is to come out of this misery. And this does not work by all these talks, discussions, debates, intellectual games. Doesn't work. One may have some satisfaction. Now I understand what this physical structure is. Oh, it is nothing but vibration. What this mind and mental content is, thus vibration. My worry, my sorrow, my pleasure, everything vibration. I understand. But still you are a victim of it. You are not coming out of it. The truth has not merely to be accepted at the intellectual level, not merely to be accepted at the devotional level, emotional level, but it has to be accepted at the actual level, the experiential level. This is what Vipassana teaches. Observe the truth. You start always with something very gross, but reality. No imagination is involved on this path. No verbalization is involved, no visualization is involved, no auto-suggestion is involved. The truth as it is. When you come to a course of 10 days, you are asked to sit down comfortably. Keep your eyes closed. keep your mouth closed. No physical activity, no vocal activity. Now explore what is happening within the framework of the body. What truth is manifesting itself? What is happening now? The first thing that you will experience is the flow of respiration, the breath coming in, the breath going out, effortlessly. You are not making effort to breathe in or breathe out. Naturally, the breath comes in, the breath goes out. Just start from there. You are asked to start from there. Observe the breath as it comes in, as it goes out, naturally. Don't make it a breathing exercise. Don't try to control the breath. The whole process is to develop your faculty to observe the reality as it is. Not as you would like it to be, but as it is, from moment to moment, from moment to moment. The breath as it is. If it is deep, it is deep. Don't try to make it shallow. If it is shallow, it is shallow. Don't try to make it deep. If it is passing to the left nostril, yes, passing to the left nostril. Don't try to direct it to the right. If it is right nostril, right nostril. If it is passing through both the nostrils, both the nostrils, as it is. This is the grossest reality from where you will start working. Very easy. You are doing nothing. You are not making any effort to breathe even. The breath is there. Like somebody sitting at the bank of the river and the river is flowing. One is just observing the flow of the river. What effort? This is the easiest thing to do. You sit at the bank of the river is flowing, you are just observing, doing nothing. You are sitting at the entrance of your nostrils, the breath flow is there, going in, coming out, you are observing, you do nothing. Easiest thing to do. And yet, when you will come to a course of 10 days, you will find so hard, so difficult. So difficult. You will observe just one or two breaths and the mind is gone somewhere. You don't know where. It's only after a few minutes you realize, oh, I was here to observe my breath, what happened? And again start. One or two breaths, again gone somewhere. And then you feel so irritated. So irritated. Such an easy task, just to observe the breath. And what kind of mind I am carrying? It can't even observe the natural flow of the breath. Why it keeps on running here and there? And your guide will say, no, no, don't react. Just accept the reality. This is the truth of the moment. The mind has wandered away. Smilingly accept it. The mind has wandered away. The old habit pattern of the mind was to react when something unwanted happens. Now you don't want your mind to wander away, it has wandered, you again react. You react with aversion. You react with anger. Whether you generate anger towards others or you generate anger towards your own self makes no difference. Anger is anger. It will make you very miserable. And you have to come out of the misery. So come out of it by accepting the truth as it is. My mind at this moment has wandered away. Good. Let me see. The breath is still there. It will come back. You won't even have to pull it. The moment you accept the fact, the mind has wandered away. It will come back. Again a few breaths, again it will wander away. Again you realize, oh look, it has wandered away. Again it will come back. Like this, working for 1 day, for 2 days, for 3 days, mind starts getting settled down. Understand, there are many different types of meditations which will calm down your mind. Like you start some verbalization, mental verbalization. You just start reciting a particular word, a mantra, repeat it again and again. Like a mother repeats lullaby for the child and the child sleeps. So your mind sleeps because you keep on repeating a particular word again, again, again. The mind becomes calm, peaceful. This is one way. Or you visualize, you imagine a particular shape, a particular form, and you keep on repeating it, mind calms down. Or you keep giving some suggestion, auto-suggestion, my mind is very peaceful, very peaceful, very peaceful. Yes, it becomes peaceful, peaceful, peaceful. All these different kinds of meditations, they help. We are not here to condemn other meditations, but understand the difference. Here, no verbalization is permitted, no visualization is permitted, no auto-suggestion is permitted, no imagination is permitted. The truth as it is. If you divert your attention to some other object, a word, a mantra, a vision, a form, a suggestion, a thought, even positive, you are running away from the problem. Running away from the problem is no solution of the problem. Escape can never give any solution. You may feel peaceful for some time. The surface level of your mind gets diverted to something else and gets settled down. You feel peaceful. But you have not penetrated the entire structure of your mind and you have not noted that deep inside turmoil is there, uneasiness is there, lot of agitation is there. You are given a very good layer at the surface of the mind and you feel happy. Vipassana does not allow such artificial layers to be given. Observe. Keep on observing. And as you keep on observing, from the gross reality that you experience initially, the breath is a very gross reality. Hard breathings, and then even if you come to soft breathing, this is a very gross reality pertaining to still subtler things which you are going to experience as you proceed further. In 2 days, in 3 days, your mind calms down, not by giving a good layer at the surface of the mind, but just by accepting the truth as it is, without reacting, accepting it, without reacting, the mind calms down a little. And then it starts experiencing something else, some biochemical reaction taking place, some electromagnetic reaction taking place, every movement throughout the body, every particle of the body, some electromagnetic reaction, some biochemical reaction. But the mind is so gross at the surface level, it can't feel what is happening throughout the physical structure. With this practice, because you are keeping your attention at the entrance of the nostrils for a few days, you start feeling these reactions on this area first. Maybe heat, maybe perspiration, maybe throbbing, maybe pulsing, maybe vibrating, maybe tingling, maybe tension, maybe strain, something or the other you feel here, and then you are trained to observe this also objectively. Just accept it. Now there is heat, so what? It's heat. Let me see how long it lasts. Throbbing, let me see how long it lasts. Itching, let me see how long it lasts. You just observe. Observe objectively. The fourth day, the fifth day you reach the stage where you feel such sensations throughout the body. And you keep on observing from head to feet, from feet to head. Observing respiration and observing these sensations on the body, at a surface level, it looks they are all physical truths. They have got so much to do with the mind. And they have got so much to do with your mental impurities, the defilements which are source of your misery, your anger, your hatred, your aversion, your animosity, your fear, your passion, your craving. Everything is connected with these body sensations and connected with the respiration. As you observe objectively, like a scientist making analytical study of the truth as it is, without imposing any kind of philosophical belief or dogma, just the truth as it is, dividing, dissecting, disintegrating, understanding the truth, the interaction of mind and matter, things become so clear. So clear and clear at the experiential level. The breath coming in, going out, yes, at the apparent level, it is a physical activity. But as you keep on observing, you notice it has got so much to do with the mind and the mental contents. As you are observing your respiration, a thought arises, maybe a thought of the past, maybe of the future, and you generate anger. Even while you are meditating, anger arises. And you notice, look, anger has arisen. And as a result of that anger, the breath has lost its normality. It is no more normal. It becomes slightly hard. It becomes slightly fast. And when that particular anger has gone away, again you notice the breath has become normal now. Oh, so this breath is strongly connected to your mental impurities. Strongly connected to your mind and mental impurities. Similarly, all the sensations on the body, this heat, the tension, the pressure, the vibration, all these are connected with your mind, with your mental impurities. When anger arises, there is a reaction in the whole body. There is heat, there is perspiration, there is tension, there is palpitation. All that is related to your anger. Similarly to your fear, to your passion, your anxiety. Whatever arises in the mind manifests itself as a sensation on the body. And when that manifests itself as a sensation on the body, the mind again keeps on reacting. This person, 25 to 26 centuries back, as a research scientist in search of the truth, not only the apparent truth but the ultimate truth, when he started making a journey inside, started making analytical study of this mind-matter phenomenon, this made him an enlightened person, and this can make anybody and everybody an enlightened person. To become enlightened is not monopoly of one Gautama who became Buddha, but proper path must be understood and must be followed. Observe objectively. As he kept on going deep, he noticed there are so many sleeping volcanoes inside. At the deepest level of your mind, so many sleeping volcanoes are there, which are accumulations of your own creation of the past. And they are lying latent. Any moment, any time, due to some stimulation or the other, they will erupt. And they will overpower you. You are again miserable. You may calm down your mind at the surface level and feel very peaceful, very happy, very harmonious, very quiet. But so long as these sleeping volcanoes are there, you are always in danger of becoming miserable again. And this is what I say when you are dealing with somebody who has got a type of vibration which is in line with the sleeping volcano, it will trigger something. And this volcano will again erupt, and you are overwhelmed by this. Come out of that. And then the service that you give will be a wonderful service because your mind is very sound, very healthy. You can face any kind of difficulty that is being generated by others, and you don't generate that particular type of misery for you and for others. Very soon, a good Vipassana meditator will start realizing the truth that a mind is a generator. Everyone's mind is a generator. It keeps on generating day and night. Every moment it keeps on generating some vibration or the other. This vibration may be positive, this vibration may be negative. Most of the time it is negative because one remains so ignorant of what is happening deep inside. So out of this ignorance, in spite of the fact that one does not want to harm oneself and harm others, yet out of this ignorance, one does not know what one is doing at the deeper level of the mind, one keeps on harming oneself, one keeps on harming others. Because one keeps on generating such vibrations which are very miserable for oneself and also the entire atmosphere gets influenced by that vibration. The more and more this ignorance goes away and the wisdom that comes not merely at the intellectual level, but the wisdom that comes by insight, by direct experience. With this wisdom, things become clearer and clearer. Every generator is generating vibrations and influencing the atmosphere around, influencing others. And similarly, one is getting influenced by the atmosphere around. One is getting influenced by the vibrations of the other people. If you are a good Vipassana meditator and a bad vibration is there around you, you just smile at it. It has triggered something in you, you observe it, and you start floating over it. You don't sink in it. It cannot overpower you. That means you are free from your misery. But this has to be practiced. It requires a lot of practice. In 10 days, one gets just an outline of the technique, how to work. It's a lifetime job. Because day and night your mind keeps on generating negative vibrations which are harmful to you, harmful to others. How to change this behavior pattern of the mind at the deepest level? This is what Vipassana teaches you. As you practice more and more, it becomes clearer and clearer how ignorantly one keeps on multiplying one's misery. Somebody has said something which I don't like. Somebody is insulted, I don't like it. And I react with anger, I become miserable. I don't know whether I have harmed the other person or not by anger, but I have certainly harmed myself. The first victim of anger is myself, not others. I become very miserable. What happens? Somebody has insulted me and gone away. He might have forgotten even. What I keep on doing? He insulted me. She insulted me. I kept on repeating it for hours together, for days together, for years together, and make myself miserable. Who is responsible? I'm responsible. He insulted me only once, but look what is happening now. I keep on repeating this drama on the platform of my mind, every moment again. And what happens now? When you generate anger, the law of nature is such, this is what this enlightened person found out, because he was not playing the game of blind devotion. He was not playing an intellectual game. He was a wonderful scientist, making a research of the truth, the apparent truth and the ultimate truth. What is happening? Why people become miserable? And is there a way out of misery? This was his quest, and this is what he found out. When you react with anger, immediately as you react with anger, at the mental level, something starts happening at the physical level. There is a secretion of some biochemical which starts flowing at the glandular level or non-glandular level. It starts flowing with the stream of the blood. And this particular biochemical which is generated because of anger is very unpleasant. This chemical is very unpleasant to you. And because you generated it, it is now flowing, you feel very unpleasant. Because you feel unpleasant, you become more angry. And you become more angry, you generate more of this particular type of biochemical. A vicious circle starts. In the language of those days, he called it asava, a flow. Now this flow, you are responsible for this flow, nobody else. This flow of particular type of biochemical, you are responsible, and you keep on reacting to it with more anger, more asava, more flow, more anger, more flow. A vicious circle for hours together, for days together. Similarly, a passion has got a particular type of biochemical, a fear has got particular type of biochemical, and you keep on reacting, and that particular biochemical increases, and you react in the same way, passion, biochemical, fear, biochemical. You make yourself so miserable, and keep on finding fault with others. My husband said so, my husband did so, my wife said so, my wife did so, my father is like this, my mother is like this, my son is like this, my daughter is like this. Oh, if they change a little, I'll be a very happy person. Talk with any housewife, she will say, if my husband changes a little, I'll be the most happy person. He doesn't understand. Small change. And talk with the husband, he says, my wife, if she changes just a little, oh, the whole family will be like a heaven. The father wants the son to change, the son wants the father to change, the wife wants the husband to change, husband wants wife to change, the neighbor wants the other neighbor to change, everyone else should change, not I. I'm perfectly all right. What's wrong with me? I'm perfectly all right. Without knowing that the whole cause of your misery is within you, not in your wife, not in your husband, not in your father, not in your mother. It all lies inside. This is what Vipassana will make you understand. And when you realize that, you also know how to come out of it. Something has triggered in. It is building up. And you start observing it. If you don't observe it and you react it, then if you're reacting, a vicious circle has started. A chemical has started flowing, because of that a particular sensation has started on the body. If you don't react to it and observe it, it will lose its strength, it will become weaker, weaker, feebler, feebler, and pass away. If you react to it, it becomes stronger, 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 will keep on multiplying. Your misery is multiplying. You are multiplying your own misery. Ignorantly, without knowing, you don't want to be miserable. You want to come out of misery. And you are seeking ways and means to come out of misery. And look what you are doing. You are just multiplying your misery. Every moment you are multiplying your misery because you are reacting to these body chemicals, these biochemicals which flow. And the cause of this flow is also within you, out of ignorance. What is happening? All that has to be realized at the experiential level. Mere talks cannot help. Mere discussions cannot help. Discussions, talks can give us some inspiration, can give us some guidelines, can give us a path, but you have to walk on the path. You have to make a journey inside to realize the truth of the interaction of mind and matter. That is why I say there are many students of Vipassana who come and they do the job of counseling others. There are even people who do some kind of therapy, massage therapy, different way to help people in different ways. I tell them, between one patient and the other, give a gap. You are dealt with one person, maybe 10 minutes or half an hour. And before you take the second person, wait a little. 10 minutes, relax. You can easily relax at the physical level. Just relax. And you find you are coming out of the tension that you build up by counseling this particular miserable person. But that relaxation is only at the physical level. Deep inside, the vibrations that you sucked, all the vibration of this person you have sucked inside, and they are working inside. And deep inside, you are a miserable person. You are a bundle of misery yourself. Unless you come out of that misery, don't touch another person, don't call another person. And that, by this practice of Vipassana, you reach a stage where you can feel a flow of subtle vibrations moving throughout the body. And within 10 minutes or so, you feel very fresh. Your battery gets charged again. And then you can work with another patient. You have to keep yourself strong. If you are weak mentally, then at the apparent level, yes, it looks you are helping people. Some people do come out of their misery by your counseling. It is good. But at the same time, quite possible, you are harming yourself. So come out of this harming yourself. And not only that. When you have purified your mind, a pure mind is such a powerful mind. A pure mind is always full of love, infinite love. Love without a trace of passion. This is a love full of compassion, where nothing is expected in return. You just feel like giving. This is the quality of a pure mind. Full of love, full of compassion, full of sympathetic joy, full of equanimity. And with this kind of mind, you speak even two words. They are so effective because your mind is so pure, the vibration is so pure. The patient will feel healed just by few words spoken by you. But deep inside, you are an agitated person. At the surface level, you speak very healing words, very counseling words. But deep inside, you are yourself agitated, then the vibration that goes with your words does not have that effect. So be a good healer. And to be a good healer, first heal yourself. Go deep inside, calm your mind, purify your mind, see that it is full of love and pure love without expecting anything in return, full of compassion, full of joy, sympathetic joy, full of equanimity, and you will find all the hazards on the path of a social worker are gone for you, no more. All the pitfalls are gone for you, no more. You are so strong. You are not a lame person helping another lame person. You are not a blind person showing part to another blind person. You are a very sound, healthy person. May all of you who have come to this seminar this evening find time to give a trial to this technique. Don't get afraid that you will get converted into a particular religion. Vipassana has nothing to do with these organized religions. It's pure science.
when somebody found out that the world is round, not flat, it is rotating on its own axis, and you accepted it, after some hesitation, you accepted it, you didn't got converted into a particular religion. Galileo or no Galileo, the world was round before Galileo, at the time of Galileo, and after Galileo. Somebody found out this law of gravitation, you accepted it, you didn't convert yourself from one religion to another religion. Newton or no Newton, that law was there, is there, will be there. Similarly, the law of relativity, Einstein or no Einstein, the law of relativity was there, is there, will be there. So also this law of mind and matter interaction, and your ignorance of reacting with craving, with aversion, with any kind of defilement, misery is bound to be there. In the past, in present, in future, a Buddha or no Buddha makes no difference. This is a discovery by a scientist. He finds out this is the real cause of your misery and this is a way to come out of the misery. You use it. If you are a Christian, you remain Christian for the whole life. Who objects? If you are a Hindu, a Hindu. A Muslim, a Muslim. A Jewish, a Jewish. Makes no difference. A human being is a human being. Vipassana helps you to become a good human being. A healthy human being, full of harmony, full of peace, full of tranquility, with a sound mind and a sound body, so that you can help others and become a real good social servant. May all of you become real good social servant. May you all be happy, be peaceful, be liberated.
We now have 20 minutes for some questions. And how we're going to do this is that you'll speak the question and then I'll repeat it into the microphone so it gets picked up by the tape recorder. Yes? Can mentally retarded people meditate? Mentally retarded people meditate?
Yes, they will have a little more difficulty, but then if proper service is given to them and there are proper facilities, as we have in quite developed centers, a seclusion is there and there are more Dhamma workers who look to them, it can be given. People get benefit.
What happens to their minds after they meditate?
Well, as the mind becomes more and more healthy, they become more and more normal. Of course, there is no magic, no miracle. As you want to make your body healthy and strong, you have to do some exercises for the body. Similarly, these are the exercises for the mind. And the mind slowly becomes healthier and healthier, sounder and sounder. But why only worry about these mentally retarded people? I feel everybody is mentally retarded, more or less.
Yes.
How does Vipassana heal particular organs in the body? Like if a particular part of the body was sick, does Vipassana and the vibrations help to heal the actual body?
Okay. Does Vipassana meditation help to heal particular organs in the body? And if so, how does this work?
One thing should be very clear, that Vipassana is not meant to heal physical diseases. Vipassana is meant to heal the mind. But healing of the body comes as a byproduct. If your mind is not sound, is very agitated, very unhappy, then you find the body also becomes unhealthy. If your mind is very sound and healthy, it starts influencing the body also. So we have noticed with the practice of Vipassana, many such diseases which are psychosomatic, they automatically get healed because the mind is very sound and now no more cause of the mind to give this particular kind of disease to the body, it goes away. Even if it's a pure physical disease, like the hand is cut now and there is a wound, if your mind is equanimous, doesn't get agitated, then all the other treatment that you are giving will have better effect, quick effect. If your mind is very agitated, then the effect will take long time. So a better mind, a sound mind, an equanimous mind is always helpful to keep the body also healthy.
Yeah?
It has to do with the relationship between inner and external reality. Now clearly in the Vipassana, the emphasis on inner reality. Is it not true that there are some very powerful external realities which entitled people to a whole wide range of negative feelings, anger, despair, sadness, sense of loss, anxiety, insecurity, guilt. Isn't human life for a lot of it basically quite tragic? We lose people whom we love, people die, we experience all sorts of deprivations. So it seems to me that if this is a technique to divert attention to these realities, that's not entirely a solution. That's a technique to divert ourselves from some realities. At the same time, I also admit that, of course, people spend a great deal of mental energy in futile anxiety and obsession and so forth. But maybe some reasons for anxiety and pain and misery are better than others or more justified. So how do you reconcile these two realities?
Okay, let's see if I can summarize that. Vipassana focuses on the internal reality, and that's fine. But what about the external reality that really causes a great deal of suffering? What use is it in dealing with the real pain of the world? Is that close enough? Okay.
Vipassana, understand, is not an escape. Not an escape from the problems of the day-to-day life. You come to Vipassana course for 10 days not for escape. You come there to gain strength to face those problems outside the world. Like you go to a hospital to become a healthy person and then make use of this health to face, live a good life. Similarly, when you understand and use this technique of observing the reality inside, you can face the outside problems much better. It is not that just by the practice of Vipassana all the problems will get solved, but your ability to face them will become better, more and more easier. Now, the problems outside, who has created? Individuals have created them. So say there is darkness all around. Even one person comes out of that darkness. If one lamp is lightened, there is some light around it. And more and more, if more and more people start practicing Vipassana, slowly it will start having influence on the atmosphere outside. But at least this person who has practiced Vipassana and is practicing Vipassana will be able to face that and find solutions for that. And those solutions will be healthy solutions.
My question is has to do with Vipassana as compared to some of the other practices you were talking about, the mantra and devotional practices, because it seems that some people have more of an aptitude for Vipassana and other people seem more inclined to more devotional practices. And I'm curious if you feel as if that maybe people could make the same progress with devotional practices or mantras as they can with Vipassana, or if there is a real distinction.
I have passed through all that because I was born in a very staunch Hindu conservative family where all these other kinds of meditations were there. And in my life, I was a very short-tempered person, full of anger, full of passion, full of ego, full of ignorance, all that was there. And people took me as a great devotee, devotion, and all that was there with me. They used to say, Goenka, a wonderful devotee, he's a saintly person, this or that, but deep inside I know so much of impurity in me. Nothing could help. That is, for some time it may give relief. You divert your mind. You are diverting the surface level of your mind. Deep inside, it does not give any effect. When you work with Vipassana, you are working with the body sensations. And the deeper level of your mind is constantly in contact with the body sensations, day and night. You are asleep or awakened. This so-called unconscious mind is not unconscious. All the time conscious, but conscious of body sensations. It feels unpleasant sensation, it will react with aversion. It feels pleasant sensation, it will react with craving, clinging. This has become the habit pattern of this part of the mind. And this is the root of the mind. Unless this is rectified, all other correctness, rectification that you do at the surface level are just temporary. And Vipassana takes us to that root because it works with the body sensations. Body sensation and the deep unconscious mind are so interrelated. If you observe body sensation and don't react to it, you are changing the habit pattern of your so-called unconscious mind, which the bhakti cult or jnana cult and all, they don't take you there. I passed through all that, and that's why I say, to me, this is the solution for everybody.
Am I missing anybody in the back? Yes. There.
I wondered if a description could be made about what causes the volcanoes deep inside.
Right. You wonder if how the volcanoes arise deep inside.
When they are stimulated, they can be stimulated due to anything happening outside. And they normally, usually, they get stimulated by that particular type of vibration. This volcano is of this wavelength vibration. And you get this kind of vibration all around you. When it gets in contact with it, it gets stimulated and erupts. If you are always with a person who is full of depression, that vibration of depression, and you got a sleeping volcano of depression, and you are always with this person, counseling this person or be with this person, that vibration keeps on stimulating your own volcano, and you become a victim of a depression yourself. This is how it happens. Yes.
Could you describe the historical origins of Vipassana?
Describe the historical origins of Vipassana.
What we have now is the history of Gautama the Buddha. But before that also Vipassana was there. Because he himself said, Purano Maggo is a very old path which got lost to the humanity and I rediscovered it. So it is an old path, but the historical evidence we have from Buddha onwards. For about 500 years it worked very well in India, then it got lost because so many other things were added to it and it got polluted. It lost its efficacy, so it got lost. It went to different countries where also it got lost, but one country, Burma, maintained it in its pristine purity, although very few people practiced, but they maintained it, and we got it now from them.
In the back.
I just want to refer back to the earlier question about the volcanoes. Could you describe how they come to be inside, not necessarily how they're stimulated, but how they come to be there?
Like, what's the origin of these volcanoes inside?
Yeah.
Are they part of our development? Do they evolve with us?
We are responsible for every volcano. We have planted that seed ourselves. And that seed keeps on giving fruit from time to time. Nobody else is responsible for that. How it started in the first place is meaningless because you keep on starting now also. You are planting volcanoes in you. Come out of that habit and you will eradicate all the past volcanoes.
Yes?
In practicing meditation, do the volcanoes go away or do you just learn how to...
Yes, they go away because they lose their strength. There are no more volcanoes. Vibrations come, bubble up and go away. That's all. Try. Give it a try. Yes.
When someone reverses these volcanoes and goes to try to bring virtue back to the life through meditation, is there a method that virtues can grow, such as trust if it's lost?
Is there a method of what?
Yes. Is there a way that
meditation.
Of
that
what?
Meditation can be used to make the virtues
make
grow?
Virtues, You see, the nature of mind by itself is pure. It is only these inputs that we have given which makes it very agitated and unhealthy. Once these impurities go away, the pure mind is full of virtue. For virtue, you have to do nothing. For love, compassion, for goodwill, you have to do nothing. That comes just spontaneously. If the mind becomes pure, a pure mind is full of all these good qualities. So the whole process is to take out the impurities and the rest what remains is virtue.
When we walk away tonight, what are some things we can practice now to start working towards this if we're not exposed to the class yet?
So that if you haven't had one of the longer 10-day courses, what can you do as you walk away today that will be useful?
Wait for the time when you can spare 10 days. What else can you do? Nothing else. Don't start practicing this breathing and sensation at home, no. You require a proper guide for your first 10 days. Later on, you are your own master. There is no gurudom involved. Never be under the clutches of a guru. No guru can do anything for you. You are your own master. But somebody who has walked on the path will show you the path. So come for 10 days. Make a decision that you come earlier.
How often are they offered?
Here in Massachusetts, I think 2 courses per month you give?
There will be pamphlets and information when people leave.
They will be giving you all information. Quite. Good.
Deborah?
Today I met with a client for the first time who had been raped and whose fiance was shot in the arms. And I understand from my own practice that the root of suffering is within us and has to do with clinging to clinging. And I couldn't resolve the two. There was this woman sitting there, and how could I, I had just met her for the first time, so I was listening. But in my own mind, I couldn't understand how that would apply to her.
You see, whatever wrong is done to her, is done to her. You can't undo it. That is over. But the process of her multiplying her own misery because of whatever is done to her, that process you can help to stop. And this is where Vipassana will come. If you have practiced Vipassana yourself, then every counseling that you give will make her understand. Of course, not as much as she herself meditates, but still at least she will start understanding that by whatever incident, however unfortunate it was, unpleasant it was, but keep on repeating in the mind that you are harming yourself. Now that has happened, finished. Now why not try to keep yourself calm and come out of it and come for a 10-day course and come out of it at the deeper level? Because all those things which have great impact on the mind, any incident, will come on the surface by the practice of Vipassana. And it will make one react in the same way as one was reacting in the past. But say, for 1 hour, one keeps on reacting and one gets few moments where one is not reacting, just observing. Those few moments slowly will become few seconds. Few seconds will become few minutes, and a time will come when one can just be equanimous with whatever has happened. It has happened, it is gone now. Why become unhappy now? This technique requires some kind of practice. So first the healer must understand it. Then your words will have little more effect. And then you can persuade this person or encourage this person to pass through this technique and come out of the misery at the deeper level.
We have about 5 more minutes. Is it back there?
To a certain extent, I value my anger and my confusion and my sadness because it points me in a direction and I can learn something. And I wondered do you see any value in these kinds of emotions besides just causing us misery? And at what point do we try to learn from the emotion before we try to get it to dissipate?
Uh-huh. Some emotions can really be teachers themselves. You can learn from your anger, you can learn from your sadness, and they seem to have a value. What is the Vipassana view of this?
Emotions by themselves do not make you miserable. If you learn how to observe your emotion, you are coming out of misery. Then you learn something from that. But if you get overpowered by these emotions, then you are a miserable person. And this is what Vipassana teaches you. Emotion will come, and you will just observe objectively. Look, this is an emotion. Look, this is anger. Look, this is sadness. Look, this is this. And along with that, let me see what sensation on the body. This is sensation on the body. This is impermanent. That is impermanent. Let me see how long it lasts. And you come out of it.
Let's have another question before we stop.
Yes.
Does the practice of pranayama or breathing exercises support Vipassana?
Pranayama has got its own value. If you want body to be healthy, then all the asanas and pranayama are very helpful, and we are not against that. But this technique of observing the respiration as it is to train the mind to accept the reality as it is. First you start reality of the breath as it is, then the reality of your body as it is, reality of your mind as it is. Otherwise you try to control and try to change, then it is not Vipassana. You learn how to observe it. That is why pranayama and Vipassana go in different directions. Pranayama, make use of it to keep your body healthy. Vipassana, make use of it, keep your mind healthy.
We are going to have to stop.